Leftovers Podcast. Frank R. Curry and
Kyle Powell.
Kyle's here with me. No Derek today. He's got other stuff going on, like an idiot. But Kyle's here because opening day for baseball is today.
I question why I have to work every year. Why I have to work today.
Right. Today's like the one. Today's like the big one of the biggest days of the year for baseball, being game one for every team.
Everybody has a chance to win this year.
Yeah, but it's the one day of the year where everyone's a baseball fan because everyone loves watching opening day. But before we get into baseball, I gotta get a little rant off on the Sabres right now, and you give me some input because you work the games a lot.
Okay.
So you know what's going on just as much as I do. It is time for Halsey to go. It really is. I think he's lost the locker room. I think the players just aren't responding to what he wants to do because they've probably realized what he wants, especially in their own end, is too much. I've noticed throughout the year that the job felt like the job was in over Halsey's head, where it was just too much for him. He wasn't ready to be an NHL coach, or he's just not meant to be an NHL head coach.
Whoops, sorry.
But his system in his own end just seems like it is way too complicated for players to understand.
How so? If I can get your take on that defensively. Because it's
defensively, I think the defensemen just seem to be doing too much. They're trying to make everything happen like that. Because you want to play a speed game. The problem is, to me, they're not keeping their game simple. The simplest way to play defense in hockey is just be in better position than the other player. When a guy is coming down the wing, left or right wing, doesn't matter, and you can keep him on the outside, heading all the way towards the goal line, just like towards the corner, that's good defense right there. You don't see it that often with the Sabres. Whenever they have the puck in their own end, they want to make that high outlet pass right away. If they have plenty of room to work with and they're like around the circle, then you know you see more smaller passes because no one's on them. Even when you got players on them, make the easy pass. Make things easier for your teammates. I don't see that all the time with the Sabres defensemen. And the only one I can single out who does it really well and keeping it simple for his teammates is Rasmus Dahlin. He's got the IQ where he knows you have a better chance of making the smaller pass than you do making the long pass. And I don't think anybody else on the team, maybe except Lawrence Pilot, he does it really well at the same time. But he has the tendencies like the other players do. Guys like Casey Nelson, I think they're getting that as well. But you're seeing too many of the same mistakes and not enough simple hockey playing.
I think you're absolutely right. I think it comes down to simplicity, especially in the NHL, with a growing team, with a defensive core that's not as strong as a team that Phil Housley has been a coach for in the past, like the Nashville Predators. Mm-hmm. They have one of the best defensive cores and have had the best defensive core for maybe 3-4 years now under Laviolette and previously Phil Housley, and they've been a beast.
Well, Housley's never been a head coach with Nashville, right. But yeah, he was an assistant there, yeah.
So you also mentioned that there's not a lot of willingness to change. I also might attribute it to just blind faith in your players and hoping they're better than they actually are, because you look at the comparisons from Nashville to Buffalo.
I don't know if it's that. I think it's more, it's you have blind faith in your system.
Well, that as well. It's a hubris that you don't want to change.
And you're refusing to accept the fact that you don't have the right players for it.
Right, because Zach Marco Scandella is not Ellis.
Is Marco Scandella a fast defenseman? No, he's a stay-at-home guy.
Right, so that's where I kind of teeter this line, because it's if you appeal down to your players and change the system because they're not good enough, then they're going to see right through that, and I don't know how they'll take that approach. It's very difficult. I mean, this season has been a complete anomaly anyway, so anything that sort of brings off a feeling of change may be good at this point. It's obviously too little too late, as is some of these call-ups and some of these roster moves that we're seeing with 5 or 6 games left.
Yeah.
Those are kind of making me scratch my head when I see them break through the Twitter timeline.
Well, I mean, you want to get a look at your young players, especially when you're not in the playoffs. So it makes sense for them to start calling some up, with Pilot up, with Nylander up. And now Victor Olofsson just got called up yesterday. He's expected to play tonight. Tage Thompson just got sent down to Rochester today, which seems like five months too late. But better late than ever, I guess.
At least he's eligible for the playoffs. It's great. You mentioned that, all right, cool. At the end of the season, we're out of the playoffs, officially eliminated. I get that. Baseball does the same thing, too. September call-ups are madness. We're trying to change that now. You get a lot of young guys the last few months of the season, especially from the teams that have been out of it, like the Sabres are now.
Yep.
But you look at the lines this morning. Jason Pominville's on the second line. You bring up Victor Olofsson, and you make this preach. You want to see what Olofsson's got now. But what did you do a week ago? Bring up Alex Nylander to see what he's got. You're burying him on the third line now, potentially tonight, with Connor Sheary and Vladimir Sobotka, while Jason Pominville plays on the second line.
Yeah, like,
you give one guy a look, you give him the spotlight tonight, and what do you do with the guy that just, he has 2 goals and 4 points? He's looked good. His shot is strong. He's really coming on in his age 21 season. He's made a good impact late in the season. Third line, getting centered by Vladimir Sobotka. Can we not multitask? Can we not put Nylander on the second line anyway? You know, Jason Pominville, God bless him. Your 10-year two with the Sabres has been great. It's been a renaissance. It's like turning back the clock. But you know he's out the door.
Right.
He's not getting re-signed.
Right.
Why is he getting second line time with 5 games left in the season?
Yeah. No, I'm totally with you on that. I look at the lines, but you know what? He's with Mittelstadt and Skinner, to where he's had success with Skinner this year with Eichel.
Yeah, so I understand that, but that success is moot right now.
Right, I totally get that. At least when you look at the lines, Victor Olofsson's with Eichel right away, and you're like, oh, right. That's actually
I believe I saw
not
some
bad.
Power play unit time as well. I'm not sure PP1 or 2. I scrolled past it.
Paul Hamilton has PP1, yep. Olofsson, Skinner, Eichel, Dahlin, and Reinhardt.
Probably on the right wing dot.
Probably, yeah. But, yeah, it's at this point now, now you're constantly asking. Every move you make that the team makes feels like, what are you doing? Or about time with that or something. And now it's any time we see what the lines are for practice, it's like, Housley, what the hell are you doing? Again. And I'm on the boat now where they may, if they don't end the season strong, they may have no choice but to fire Housley right after the year. Just because can you really trust him to help turn it around? Even if you have a good off season, can you trust him to turn it around? If you can't, you might as well just find a new coach now.
Yeah, you can kind of sense in the locker room after these games, loss after loss. I wasn't here working the Ottawa game, but I'm kind of glad I wasn't. In some regard, I can't imagine what that may have sounded like, but game like that, season like that, after you first in the NHL after 25 games, obviously, that wasn't going to hold up. There were so many better teams, especially in your own division and overall in the Eastern Conference, that were going to overtake you. But it just stinks now looking back. Not so much at the streak, because fluky stuff like that happens all the time. I watched the Flyers go on a 10-game winning streak 2 years ago and then proceed to lose 10 in a row later in the season. I get it. It's a fluky sport. You get good bounces for 3 weeks, and all of a sudden you're vaulted up with nearly 30 points through X amount of games. It's great. And but the beauty about the NHL and the point system is if you have a streak like that, and that's what we were talking about earlier in the season, literally all you had to do if you were Buffalo was play 500 hockey, get to overtime, get a point, and you're in the talk for the playoffs in the last month or so, and they didn't. And now it just stinks looking back on this, because it would be even more of a sour note on the season if you collapse like this, and then you play so poorly against these teams that you were looking forward to ending the season against had you been in a playoff position. Ottawa twice, Detroit, come on. Are you kidding me? That's your last 2 weeks. New Jersey, imagine.
Your
two
toughest
points out,
game,
4 points out.
You know, your
you just
toughest,
ride, you just, what's the word I'm
your toughest games are against Nashville and Columbus. And that Columbus game would have had
Columbus is spiraling anyway.
Yeah, and but even then, that game would have had so many implications.
So the sour note that already has been every game in this building since December now becomes even more sour, knowing that, all right, fine, you collapsed. You can live with that if you go out and your young players give you a good showing in the final 2-3 weeks of the season, and they're not even doing that.
No.
Someone's got to be blamed.
Yeah, someone. Someone's got to take the fall for it. I mean, I think the players are going to at the same time, but it's like we've been saying. It may just leave them with no other option.
You honestly, you might
it
be
really
right.
It really does come a matter of trust. If the management, and I'm not talking just Jay Sabatra, I'm also talking the Pegulas as well, if they really do trust Housley going into after the season, because they're going to have a one-on-one with Housley and Batra, and even they might include the owners in there too. If they really do trust him, he's going to stay. If there's any sign of doubt, I think he's gone. And what the only way we'll know about it is if it's announced that Housley is staying or Housley's fired. This is one of those cases where I don't think you can fire the GM as well for this. Because I truly believe that Tim Murray got fired not only because of how bad of a job he did, obviously. We know that now. But initially, I think he got fired because he refused to fire Dan Bylsma. Because there was the report that came out, I think it was around May of 2017, maybe like just after the year, that Jack Eichel would refuse to sign a contract extension with the Sabres if Dan Bylsma was still the head coach. And I think that is what ended up propelling Bylsma to be fired.
I don't doubt it at all. It's a players' league, and they really call the shots when it comes down to it, because I experienced that same thing last December with the Flyers.
Yeah.
Firing Dave Hakstol. Granted, it was overdue. He was doing a piss-poor job with a young team sort of like this that was on the cusp. They had some veterans. They had some young talent coming through the ranks, and they were floundering. And Ron Hextall, who was the general manager, decided to fall on the hill and die on the hill of Dave Hakstol is my coach.
Yeah.
Who takes the fall? Ron Hextall. Other hierarchs step in and make the final decision, and Hakstol goes too. Because the players were not happy with him. Jack Eichel was not happy with Bylsma.
Mm-hmm.
Someone comes to Bylsma's defense. Who loses that fight?
Yeah.
Your 20-year-old budding superstar?
No.
Or your general manager?
Yeah, exactly. No, I absolutely. I 100% agree with that. And I just hope that it doesn't become the same thing with Batra. Because I like what Batra's done so far as GM. But Housley's obviously a different story. Mm-hmm. So this might be a case where if Batra refuses to fire Housley, this might be a case where you just bite the bullet and say, we'll keep him on till the start of the year. We'll trust that you can have a good offseason and help turn, and you two can turn this around. But if that comes out of Batra really wants Housley to stay and everything, he might be on a short leash going into next year at the same time as Housley would. Yeah. And if they don't get off to a good start, it might not just be Housley gone, it's both. him and Botro gone, even with how Botro's done so far. Just because you have to fire Housley. And I don't think the Pegulas will not be afraid to fire Botro at the same time, because they feel the heat from the fans.
As they should.
Yeah. And even then we say as they should, and I love the Botro hiring. They did a good job with that one. He's a good hockey guy. He knows what he's talking about. He knows to play the modern game. He comes from a winning organization in Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
And he's one of the youngest GMs in the league, too. He's only 42. He hasn't had a lot of time.
Zdeno Chara.
Yeah.
Perspective right there.
Perspective, yeah. No, really. I mean, but Botro hasn't given me a reason to not like what he's done so far. Obviously, there's the O'Reilly trade. A lot of people were questioning the Kane trade. I think those situations are just different in terms of both the players' perceived value around the league was not as high.
And there's nothing you can do about that.
At
the end of the day, you need to get what you can get.
Yeah.
Because you know Evander Kane is going to be out the door in the summer anyway.
And you were already looking to trade O'Reilly. Mm-hmm. Paul Hamilton did say that they were trying to trade him at the deadline last year, and nothing just happened. I believe that. I absolutely believe that. Mm-hmm. And that's before O'Reilly made those comments. So, yeah, and other, things happen, so value can go down. Kane had those off-ice issues, and you couldn't get a guaranteed first-round pick out of him.
Mm-hmm.
You had to get lucky for that to happen. Ryan O'Reilly, he has more value to him because he's a really good player, and he's been consistently good for a bad team, bad Sabres team. But at the same time, if you want to move him, you want to move him. Next thing you know, you don't move him at the deadline. Those comments happen, and now people are unsure about him. And I'm proud of people that turn other general managers. They're just unsure now. What are you trading? Are you trading for a guy who's going to quit on you?
Yeah.
You don't know that. No. That's why it was so hard to trade him, even with the trade that ended up happening. Because Buffalo had to bite the bullet on it, that his value was not completely up there. Because other GMs didn't just perceive value does that. I don't know.
You can just put that into a recording and just play that anytime.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
Just click.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know.
Next time somebody asks what's wrong with the Sabres, just take the clip of me saying, I don't know.
Yep. It's applicable just about anywhere.
Yeah.
How'd they win 10 games in a row?
I don't know.
How do they have 14 wins in 49 games?
I don't know. Yeah, it's true.
How have they not won on the road in nearly 3 months?
I don't know. It's going to be a very important offseason for the Sabres. Really is. Mm-hmm. For Botro, for Housley, if Housley's still here. But mostly Botro. So, you have that. Olsen got called up today. Playing online with Eichel and Reinhardt. Like that already. He's wearing number 41. Nate Oates leaving UB.
That was some breaking news. Was that from 4 o'clock yesterday?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think it was around there. Going to Alabama, of all schools.
Mm-hmm.
For basketball. Weird.
I thought that as well.
Like, Alabama, really? But what'd you think? But what did you think of that, at least?
I have to say that I wasn't completely shocked. Program-wise, a little shocked. Not the best prowess in the basketball arena for D1 athletics down there with the Crimson Tide, but they have deeper pockets than a mid-major school like Buffalo. And, a lot of questions yesterday was, well, he just signed an extension 2 weeks ago. What the hell? Pulling the rug out from under us? It's not holding the mirror. You had to have known that going into the offseason, when it was going to come for Buffalo, whether it was going to be in the Sweet 16 or round of 32 like it ended up being against Texas Tech, teams are going to call.
Oh, yeah.
teams are going to call.
Yeah, school,
mid-major
school
or not, low-tier D1 school or not, 32 wins is quite a feat. 92 wins in four seasons is quite a feat.
Yeah.
A record 50 games over 500 is quite a feat wherever you are. His phone has probably been ringing for longer than we could even imagine.
Yeah, even before this year, probably. Yeah.
And, you know, more power to him is what it comes down to. Like, you can say that he stiffed Buffalo, he should have stayed here in UB and made a legacy. At the end of the day, though, he's a human. He has an affinity for this school. He loves the area. I know he's talked well about the area of Buffalo and wanted to stay here for a long time. But at the end of the day, if you get an offer, you can't refuse. You can't tell me that if you were in Nate Oates' shoes with the prowess and the coaching resume that you were building, that you wouldn't take an offer like that. I don't care what it was. It's an upgrade. School-wise, I know they're more known for football, and they have a pretty solid baseball program. Basketball is like, it takes a backseat in Alabama, but it's still Alabama. It's a huge pay raise. This guy is in the prime of his coaching career. Yeah, it would have been great, sentiment-wise, the same in Buffalo, but you can't tell me that you're sitting in Nate Oates' red Nike shoes right here like me, and you're sitting there talking to Alabama, who ironically wears red, And they hand you an offer. You see the contract, and you're like,
"I can't refuse this." Yeah, no, and
secure the bag.
Yeah, and
good for him.
Yeah, it's like you get asked to do the same job in a different place, but you get three times as much money doing it. Four times as much. That's essentially what he essentially got. Four times raise.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you take that any day. You're doing the same job, just in a different place. No, but you're getting paid a hell of a lot more money to do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's all what happened. And you said too. That's what UB is. They're a stepping stone program. No matter how much success they have, unless they win the national title or even go to the Final Four, unless they do that, that's what they'll always be. Bobby Hurley did the same thing, and Nate Oates took over him, and now he's doing the same thing.
Exactly right.
But it shows that it does show that UB can recruit good coaches. It shows that.
Oh, for sure.
You might eventually find one that sticks. You might. You just might. That might stick around for a decade. You might get lucky. You hope so, but you can't expect it all the time. Just keep recruiting good coaches and keep having good years for your basketball team. Eventually, something will stick. That's what happened with Gonzaga. Something sticked, and now they're one of the
20 years later.
They're one of the best teams, and there's one of the best teams in the country, even though they're a mid-major. All right, time to really get into the reason why you're here. Opening day baseball,
30 minutes away.
It starts in 30 minutes. Your team is Washington.
The Washington Nationals.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. Today will be the first game since 2012 played AB after Bryce.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. I know. So let's start then. Let's go division by division.
Okay.
Let's start in the NL East.
All right. I have some storylines written down because I was really excited. Came in early and just jotted down every thought I could think of. And ironically, I had some NL East teams. Washington. I think they can be successful this year after Bryce, as long as they stay healthy.
Yeah.
You've had injuries in the past, multiple surgeries, injuries, innings limits. Steven Strasburg needs to be your number two. Adam Eaton. Trade with the White Sox before 2017. The prospects have not panned out for Chicago, but the Major League Baseball-ready player has not been healthy for the Nationals. If he's healthy, leading off at the top of that order, setting things up for Trey Turner, Juan Soto, Anthony Rendon, the lineup will be successful. He's a spark plug, but he's got to be on the field. 95 games last year. OBP over 350, average over 300, 33 RBI. Missed half the season.
Yeah.
It doesn't do me any good. Max Scherzer is what he is on the mound. You know what you're going to get. The guy is an absolute freak. He starts today in 30 minutes against reigning Cy Young winner Jacob DeGrom.
Ooh.
For the also high-powered New York Mets. Should I call him high-powered? How long do they contend? What do you think? Robinson Cano, Jed Lowry, Edwin Sugar Diaz closing out the games. You got to be leading for him to be effective, though.
Yeah. The biggest thing with the Mets is they're still the Mets.
Yeah.
They have a tendency to mess things up.
Mess things up.
They look at how they started last year. They started 11-1 last year. So how much trust can you really put into the Mets? It's probably going to be those two, them and Washington, fighting it out for the third place in the NL East. You got to think the Braves and Phillies are the two favorites. The Phillies are probably the favorites since they landed Harper.
You like the Braves still being second place, fighting for the wild card?
I can see it. The Braves. I feel like they can overtake Philly, and it might not be that difficult. Philly's got the pieces. I love Reese Hoskins.
Beast Hoskins.
I love him so much. He's an animal. Yeah. Now you got him and Harper. You could go those two, like 3 and 4 in the lineup if you want.
That's what they're doing today.
Yeah. So that's going to be really tough. And then the Marlins are the Marlins.
Marlins will be the punching bag.
As they always are.
As if they haven't been already.
Don't worry.
But another intriguing thing from the Mets today, Pete Alonso. Top first base prospect from the Mets. Overtook Dom Smith a year or so ago as a top first baseman prospect in the Mets organization. He's going to make his debut today in the lineup against Max Scherzer. He broke the opening day 25-man roster because the Mets and Brody Van Wagenen said, we want our best 25 off the rip. Pete Alonso's strong spring helps him break with the Amazons. I have him on my fantasy team in one of my leagues. I was intrigued by him. It was kind of a stash if he'd make the opening day roster. I don't want to play him, though, because he's facing Max Scherzer. So we're going to wait and see how he does.
Are you a big fantasy baseball guy?
Yes.
Like, do you play multiple baseball leagues or just one?
I play multiple.
Multiple? They're all for money?
Yeah.
Nice. I'm big on fantasy sports too. Just football and hockey for me.
Okay.
I love baseball, but I don't think I want to do it that much. Summer for me is where I'm just more casual, and I just want to be casual and watching my sports too. So I don't want to be tied to anything. So fantasy baseball, just not for me. For that.
I understand that. I'll get to that point eventually. I don't know when to quit. I won my league once, and it was 5 years ago.
You have fun with it, and you do it if you enjoy it.
I'm a perennial bridesmaid, though.
Yeah.
I'll make the playoffs, but I'll find a way to screw it up.
I was asked to join a fantasy baseball league. I didn't want to.
Yeah.
I just don't want to be tied. I don't want to be tied to anything, especially over the summer.
That's fair. I feel like you enjoy it a little more.
Yeah. Central. Let's go to the NL Central now.
This is a super intriguing division.
I think so.
And I told you this before we got on the air briefly. Ooh, excuse me. Briefly. I really think the only storyline I really wrote out of the Central was a brief thing on the Cubs. I think going into this year, I think their window is quickly closing or may have already closed in the offseason. You tell me if you feel different.
It's hard to really say so because Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo are still young. And I feel as long as those two are still in their prime and they still got Javier Baez, he had a great year last year. You have those three already. I don't know how you can say that they're not going to be as good.
I understand.
It's hard with that hitting. They're still a well managed team with John Madden. Losing Arrieta are kind of hurt, but
Pecota wasn't too friendly for them in the offseason, and I can see why. The offense to me is not the problem.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to prevent them from getting some wins. They may turn into a I have to outslug my rotation kind of team. Baez, Bryant, Rizzo, you name it. Kyle Schwarber from the left-hand side. Wilson Contreras is a bounce-back candidate behind the plate. I think these are great pieces for the offense, but the rotation and especially the back end of the bullpen is what worries me for the Cubs. Mm-hmm. John Lester is, Lord, I don't know, 36 right now?
Yeah.
He's making an open day start, which is great. John Lester's a bulldog. Mm-hmm. You got to make it to the playoffs to see the best bulldog mentality out there for the lefty. Yu Darvish is coming off an injury-filled season. Kyle Hendricks, pitch-to-contact guy, doesn't play very well in a swing-happy Major League Baseball like it is these days. Tyler Chatwood, I'm not even – I have to look this up. He may still be in the Cubs rotation. 95 walks last year. Pedro Strop is getting up there in age in the back end, and they're relying on Brandon Morrow to be their closer again, who missed half of last season. He's an injury-filled
right. –
he's an injury-plagued player his entire career. He had lights-out stuff as a Blue Jay breaking in 2010. Struck out 17 Rays en route to a one-hitter in 2011. The guy has filthy stuff, got converted to a reliever late in his career. But still, he was gone last year. They were able to take it down to the wire, ended up being a wildcard team after losing game 163. But that everybody on that roster, the offense being a year older benefits them. That's one more year under their belt because they're young. But in terms of pitching, that worries me.
I could see that. Is it the Central feels more like it's the Brewers to lose?
It's the Brewers to lose, and I expect St. Louis to make a huge jump.
They're gonna they're gonna be up there.
I think they're going
It's going to be those three teams, especially with St. Louis trading for Paul Goldschmidt.
Exactly. I think they're going to thrive in the full year of Mike Schilt, too, because I think they – I think Mike Matheny got stale last year, and I remember them bringing Mike Schilt on into the summer from their AAA team, and they played like 600 baseball en route to almost winning a wild card berth in the Central after being dead in the water with a manager who had taken them to a World Series in the past.
Yeah.
Paul Goldschmidt. Going to be there for 5 years.
Yep.
Huge. America's first baseman, one of my favorite players to watch, and I'm glad he's not going to be on at 10 o'clock anymore.
Right.
Out in Arizona, because I think a lot of people missed out on some of his best years in Arizona.
I'm glad he's out of the division, too, but that's for reasons.
Marcell Ozuna, bounce-back candidate. Paul DeJong in year three, bounce-back candidate. Did not do as well in his sophomore season. Harrison Bader has electric, game-changing speed in center field that bodes well defensively and on the base paths. He'll be a spark plug at the top of that order.
Mm-hmm.
And their rotation. Miles Michaelis making an opener day start today. What a renaissance he was from Japan. Great, great season last year. 18-4. Looking to replicate that this year. Jack Flaherty, he's one of my dark horse, not Cy Young winners, but I'm high on him this year to be in the top five, top ten.
Yeah.
Pitchers in the National League. That guy's got electric stuff, and he's poised, and he's mature for his age, and I like his mechanics, and I feel like that's going to be a name you're going to be hearing a lot this summer. He may have his first All-Star team, but I think he's going to do very well for the Cardinals in year two. I like him a lot.
Okay. Let's go over to the West now. I think, once again, it's pretty easy. It's the Dodgers to lose. They don't win the division. Something really went wrong. You don't really know what the Giants are. Because you really don't know every year. They could be good or they could just be really bad.
Up until 2016, you knew what they were going to be.
Yeah.
Every other year.
But yeah, they're in every other year.
The Mets spoiled that.
Yeah. The Padres are very interesting with them signing Machado.
Excuse me, I misspoke before somebody comments on Twitter if they listen to this. The Mets did not destroy the Giants sixth season. They beat the Mets in the wild card game. I had it confused. Cubs beat them in five games in the NLDS. There you have it. Cubs spoiled it, not the Mets.
Padres are an interesting team with Machado. They have some good young players coming up as well. Their pitching kind of scares me too, where I don't want to fully think that they'll be a top two team.
A lot of young lefties.
Yeah.
Eric Lauer, Joey Lucchese, Matt Strom from Kansas City.
Yeah.
Interesting bunch they have going right now.
You don't really know what the D-backs are going to be now that Goldschmidt's gone.
And Patrick Corbin.
Yeah. So they might be at – they're probably going to be at the bottom with the Giants. And then Colorado. My team, Colorado. The Rockies.
I think I might be higher on the Rockies than you are, and they're your team. I think this could be a year that they're ready to dethrone the Dodgers. We may have somebody winning the West for the first time since 2012 that isn't wearing blue and white.
I'm hopeful for that. It's hard to expect it. Just because they're offensively they're great. You got Blackman, you got Arenado, like you're good. With that,
I like Daniel.
Even Trevor Story too. Trevor Story is great.
I was pretty psyched about the Daniel Murphy signing too. I think you positioned him in there in first base. The Ian Desmond project did not work.
No,
so he'll either be a bench bat or you stick him in the outfield if you need him every few days as a platoon guy. I think Murphy, though, at this stage of his career, first base suits him well.
Yeah, I think so.
You take the glove out of his hand as much as you possibly can to say, sit here, put your right foot on first base, and catch as many balls from Nolan Arenado as you can. And you just hit your 25 bombs and you hit me 310. You shoot some gaps and we'll be fine.
Yeah.
I think he'll play. I think that's a nice signing. And I think year two of a lot of their pieces in their starting rotation will be pivotal on whether or not they can chase down the Dodgers.
And that's what's going to be it for me too. You know, it really does come down to their pitching.
Kyle Freeland was an animal. His metrics were a little friendly.
Opening day starter.
He's a regression candidate, yeah. But if he can overcome that again, mixed with Marquez's nasty stuff, John Gray, Antonio Senzatella, who wasn't as big last year, but he could be another guy that's useful here in 2019. Like Wade Davis in the back end, you know what he's been in Kansas City, high altitude, whatever. His ERA will be higher, but you know what you're getting. Not bad.
Yeah.
As long as the rotation holds up and they're somewhat like they were last year, I think you got a two-horse race. The Padres will be in the mix. They might finish above 500. I think they could win 82 games.
Yeah, they definitely could.
But it'll come down to LA and Colorado.
That's I think that's the hope right now for Rockies fans, right? But LA's still the favorite. They didn't make as many major changes. Obviously, they traded Puig.
They did. He's in Cincinnati.
Yeah, but
and Alex Wood.
Yeah. All right.
Oh, before we leave, the Dodgers. I have a snippet.
What's that?
Where did she go? Hyunjin Ryu will be making the opening day start for the Dodgers in Chavez Ravine at 4:15 against Zach Greinke and the Diamondbacks.
Okay.
Hyunjin Ryu is the first opening day starter for the Dodgers, not named Clayton Kershaw, since 2010.
Wow.
I will Venmo you $20 if you can name me the last opening day starter for the Dodgers that wasn't Clayton Kershaw prior to what Hyunjin Ryu is about to do in 3 hours.
Ooh. Can I get a hint? One hint?
Oh, boy.
Because I don't know.
He was kind of known as a bean baller back in his day. This was the twilight of his career. I know him from stints with the Rangers and the Phillies. Believe he was Dominican.
I can't think of it.
Vicente Padilla.
Wow. I don't remember him. One bet.
Not many people do.
Yeah. All right, let's go over to the American League. We'll start with the AL East.
The title defense
of the another Boston team winning a championship, the Red Sox.
Will the Red Sox become the first team to repeat as World Series champs since 2000? Frank, your thoughts.
Ugh. If there's any team to do it, it's them. But we all said the same thing about the Cubs 2 years ago.
That we did.
And, I mean, they could. They easily could. They're a good young team. Mookie Betts is a monster. I think he should be one of the favorites to win the MVP this year. He's so good. Chris Sale's a Cy Young pitcher. And if David Price is good, you know, if you get some consistency out of him, yeah, I mean that's another Red Sox team that, one, easily wins the division, two, destroys the playoffs and wins the World Series again.
You heard it here first.
Really, it really could. And I think they'll win the division over the Yankees. You don't know what Tampa's gonna be. I think they were surprisingly good last season.
90 wins.
Surprisingly good. No one expected that out of them.
Not even sure if their manager did.
No.
90 wins with an opener. Blake Snell and the rest.
Yeah.
Pray for rain in your domed ballpark.
Yeah.
But no. They held off the rain. They went with games of 8 pitchers and won 90 games.
Yeah.
Had it not been for the Yankees winning nearly 100 games and the Athletics winning 97, they may be in the wild card.
They could have been.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, they could have been.
Crazy stuff.
It's but it's gonna, depending on what Tampa does, it's really gonna be between Boston and New York. Toronto and Baltimore are gonna be at the bottom, likely, for Toronto at least.
You think Baltimore gets the 50 wins this year?
They have to.
I don't know, man.
Like,
they had 47 last year.
Yeah, there's no way they could be worse than that. Or even the same.
Jonathan Scope's been traded. Manny Machado's been traded twice.
Yeah.
Alex Cobb is the only name that comes to mind. Adam Jones is even in Arizona.
I don't know.
It could be a historically bad season.
It could.
They don't even have any good prospects.
No, they don't.
They're still paying Chris Davis $23 million a year to hit as high as his contract. He hit 168 last year. You know what they're paying him? 161. Oh, Baltimore. Please.
Funny. Let's go to the Central now.
Interesting. The talk of the Central, Frank, I'm sure you know this, are the Minnesota Twins. They're strong offseason, primed to take the spotlight from the Cleveland Indians. Will there be a changing of the guard here in 2019 for Rocco Baldelli and company out in Target Field?
I think they can.
I think they can, too.
I think they have a really good chance at it. Cleveland's still pretty strong, but they've also been, I mean, Cleveland just, they have not been able to get it done in the playoffs, and that can get to you. And eventually that does wear you down.
It's amazing, too, that they weren't able to be successful, especially last year in the playoffs, because it was, that division was wrapped up in July.
Yeah.
You had all the time in the world to be ready for October.
Yeah.
And you still weren't.
Mm-hmm.
That's unacceptable.
I
don't even remember if there was a team above 500 in that division that wasn't the Indians. That team was a punching bag. That division was a punching bag, and they still had the least amount of wins in the American League among division winners.
Yeah.
I don't know. The offense is kind of punchless. You're going to be missing Francisco Lindor and potentially Jose Ramirez for parts of the start of the season.
Yeah.
Up the middle, which is already weak. Michael Brantley's in Houston. Tyler Naquin could be your center fielder. Jason Kipnis, I don't know where he is at the stage of the career. If his career, they tried him in the outfit. They kind of have a weak lineup.
Their window is shutting fast.
It is.
Really fast. And the Twins are likely going to break down that door and take over.
I think it's possible. I'm glad you're on the same page as me, because Minnesota had some sexy signings.
Yeah.
You can't bet against Nelson Cruz.
Yeah.
Until proven otherwise, I expect 35 and 90 from him.
Yeah.
I don't care how old he is. Eddie Rosario is a huge left-handed bat for them. He broke on the scene last year. Byron Buxton, if he ever gets it together, going to be huge in center field for them. He can go get it with the best of them. Marwin Gonzalez, Jonathan Scope.
No, but yeah, I think the Twins are the dark horse to win the Central this year and even be one of the top teams in the AL.
Sure, book it. You heard it here.
Yeah. Last division now, we'll go to the AL West. It's Houston's still the favorite.
Not right now. The Mariners 2-0. Yes, okay. Houston is seen as the favorite.
I
agree with that. Wholeheartedly.
How about the Angels locking up Trout?
I liked it. Didn't love it from a selfish standpoint. I thought he would come to Philadelphia at some point in his career, but at the same point, I reflected on it.
Mm-hmm.
Really thought it was good on his part. It's loyalty. You don't get a lot of that.
Yeah. He's committed to winning. He's committed to playing in L.A., and he's trusting the organization can build a team around him.
For sure.
He's probably the best player in baseball.
He is the best player in baseball.
Yeah. Like, he's unbelievably good. But it's still Houston. You wonder if Oakland can be there again.
I don't know about that.
That's why I say you wonder.
Yeah.
You know, you wonder, too, if the Mariners can finally turn it around and make the playoffs for the first time in forever.
Dude, I hope, man.
They, you know, we hear Buffalo talk about droughts and everything, playoff droughts with the Bills, now with the Sabres. The Seattle Mariners haven't been to the playoffs since 2001.
They set an American League record for wins.
Yeah. Yeah.
17 years later.
Yeah.
Every year. Man, this could be the Mariners' year. They just look okay. I remember, I think it was 2014. They brought it down to the final weekend.
Yep.
Couldn't get it done. Last year, I'm working a Bison's game. The Mariners are off to a hot start again. We're between innings. I'm getting Pat's ear. I'm like, Pat, do you believe in the Mariners this year? He goes, no. Not until they prove me otherwise. I was like, come on, Pat. It's fun. Nope.
It's fair, though. It's fair. Yeah, I don't.
Poor King Felix. That's all I got to say.
I know. Oh, he's so good. And he's had to spend his whole career in Seattle. But now Ichiro's retired. Was that a good send-off for him?
Oh, I don't think it could have been better.
It was fantastic.
Most definitely.
Yeah.
Most definitely.
The only thing I wish I could have seen was Ichiro in the World Series. That's the only thing I wish.
Yeah.
I could have ever seen. His best chance would have been with the Yankees.
Yeah, and he was there.
Or the first year he was there, which was 2001. No,
something out of Star Wars. His throw from right field to nail Terrence Long at third base.
Yeah, those are his best chance. Those are his best chances.
Yeah,
but it's division. You wonder what the Angels are going to be. You wonder what Mariners are going to be. Man. Texas is going to be at the bottom.
This wasn't quite as drastic as last year. Looking at some rosters, but I still miss some of the parity. This felt too easy.
It did. The only real differences you can see is the Twins.
Yeah.
Really.
NL East is going to be one of the most exciting divisions.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah.
AL Central's a two-horse race. The AL West is wrapped. Unless something spectacular happens in the first 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
And we see a major injury out of Houston.
Yeah.
Even that might not stop them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dodgers and Rockies, potential two-horse race in the West. The Central, another good one. Put that up with the East.
Yeah. NL Central and NL East are probably the two best divisions in terms of you don't know what's going to happen.
Four potential teams that could be in the mix, at least through the summer.
Yeah.
Most definitely. I agree with that.
Yeah.
You could say five. You don't know what you're going to get out of Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Jameson Taillon, one of my favorite baseball names. I can't believe it took me this long to say it. I just like saying it.
Yeah, Pittsburgh's... I don't know. I want to believe in them, but they had a good start last year, and they looked like they could make some noise down the stretch. And they bought at the deadline, and then it just failed.
Best part is you can try it again with Chris Archer in the rotation for two more years.
Yeah,
it cost you Austin Meadows and Tyler Glasnow. He throws triple digits, and he's learning a cutter, which could be a good piece for the Rays. But that's a send-off you're willing to settle with if you're Pittsburgh. Neil Huntington, Chris Archer's a proven starter. That's fine. That's still a building piece. He's not quite 30 years old yet. But, man, if Meadows finds a way into the Rays outfield this year and starts to flourish, it'll hurt a little more.
Yeah, it would. Definitely. Yeah, I'm just unsure. I'm just really unsure about Pittsburgh. They seem boom or bust. They're either going to be really good or really bad with Cincy.
That's fair. That is very fair. Cincinnati's going to be very... If they're not going to be good, they're at least going to be exciting.
Yeah.
I think Yasiel Puig's going to bring in electricity to that city that I think has been needing it since maybe 2012.
Yeah.
Their last playoff appearance.
Who knows? But I think that'll do it. I don't want to do predictions.
That's fine with me.
I feel like they would be too easy.
I just want spring to be eternal.
Yeah.
That's all I want.
Yeah, that is fair. Well, Kyle, thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me on.
This was fun. We got to do it again. We'll have Derek with us next time. Have to. But this has been the Leftovers Podcast with Franco Curry and Kyle Powell. Don't forget, the 11-day power play is going on in July. I believe it's the 5th to the 15th. The GR team will be playing on July 10th from 3 to 6. I'm on another team with Derek. We're playing the very next day, July 11th, from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m.
Oh, the early bird special.
And a 12-hour turnaround from the previous game.
Nice. Your legs
it's
will
gonna
be tested.
It's going to be something. But donate to our pages. My page is up on Twitter. I'm at Frank R. Curry. You're not playing.
I can't skate.
That makes
sense.
So
I'll be working.
Yeah. But.
But I will be pulling for everybody playing. Because it is a great cause. And one of these years, I will get my happy ass onto a rink and learn how to skate and put a stick in my hand. But I did not grow up around here, so apologies to every Buffalonian that I'm upsetting. I didn't spend a lot of time on the ice as a kid. So I'm 23 now, and I really have to.
No big deal.
I got to crawl before I can walk.
Yeah. But my donation page is on my Twitter, at Frank R. Curry. Derek's is on his Twitter. He is at DerekKramer49. Donate to the cause. The 11-day power play is awesome. It's in its third year. There's so many teams that they actually had to cut down the actual skate times. They were 4 hours last year. Now they're 3 hours this year because more teams are signing up to play and more people want to help the cause.
That's good.
That is amazing what the Lesikowskis have done. In their three years of doing this fundraising and doing this event, so I'm very happy to be taking part in it. And anybody who donates, you're already taking part in the events in the fundraising and helping out anybody who has to go through having cancer or a family member or a friend having cancer, because that sucks. It's the worst. So, thank you for listening. Frank R. Curry, Kyle Powell. Derek will be back on Monday. It's Leftovers.